Okay, today we have a speaker. His name is Seamus, and without further ado, I'm just going to go ahead and have you start speaking. Thanks for letting
Thank you,
me on
Bridget.
the surface.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Lovely. Thank you very much for asking me to speak. And I'm very grateful to be here and to have the opportunity and just to be the first speaker, really, you know. I was christened James Crowley, but through my sobriety, I'm trying to reclaim my Gaelic roots. So I'm going back to Seamus, which is the translation from James or Jimmy or Jamie to Seamus in Osceola. So I now like to refer to myself as Seamus O'Cruilleoch, which means the hardened warrior, the O'Cruilleoch. You know, I'd say O is the son of, and Cruilleoch is hardened warrior. And it means a lot more than just Jamie Crowley. You know, so I'm. People are getting confused a lot. And as you were speaking about, there's an article written about me here in a local paper. Two of them actually, and whatever, but one of them's calling me Jamie, the other one's calling me Seamus, and people are going, you have to get yourself in get your ducks in a row, like, you know. So I'm gonna have to change my I have to go about it like kind of legally and bank accounts and passports and stuff like that. But yeah, so I like to be referred to as Seamus, so I appreciate that. Yeah, so my name is Seamus O'Cruilleoch, and I like to refer to myself as an alcoholic, label myself as an alcoholic, or whatever way you want to look at it. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I'm a grateful alcoholic, you know. Yeah, I suppose I'm very lucky to be where I am today, and I do believe that I'm one of the blessed ones, you know. My life has been ups and downs and ins and outs and. Everybody has their story, you know. But for me, I was born in a house about 5 miles from here, from where I am now. And my mum and dad suffered with alcoholism in their DNA, really. And from where I was, there was 24 houses, one pub, one shop, one school, one GAA pitch. One and just loads of fields. So it was great. It was great. It was great times actually for a certain length of time growing up there. But when you came out my front door, you're looking straight at a pub. 90% of the terrace spent of where I lived spent 90% of their time in it, you know. And that's just the way it was. I knew no different. And I didn't I knew no different, and I didn't understand anything that was going on, obviously at the time. And tis only with hindsight, really, and getting sober, I can understand what was actually going on. You know, there was physical abuse in the house, there was mental abuse in the house, there was mental health issues in the house, there was alcoholism in the house. In the more extended family, then there would have been severe mental health issues and severe alcoholism. I witnessed very strange things growing up, violent and also kind of, you'd say, kind of just mental health episodes, I suppose, and all these kind of things, you know. And this was all just a part of my life growing up. I knew no different. I did know that my neighbors weren't doing it as much as we were doing it, but I just didn't know any different, really, as such. So I definitely felt a level of shame and stuff like that when things got out of hand. And I just remember one story, like, so you'd have to walk through the churchyard to get to my primary school, and the same back, obviously. And one day I was coming back at 3 o'clock in the day with the, when the school closed, and I could see my mother and my aunt walking across the road, absolutely twisted drunk. And then they started to fight each other in the terrace grounds, you know. And I remember running around the back of the terrace so that people wouldn't see me or know that it was my mother. Or, and it was frightening, like, you know. And then you'd have a lot of anger then, of course, because you'd be angry at your mother for upsetting you and all these other things. And it was just a whirlwind of emotions. And and no tools to deal with them, you know? So things being thrown at you and you're not knowing to duck or to go at it or to fucking run away or to... And it was just, it was madness. And all the while, I was acting out as well, you know? I'd be breaking windows from a very young age. I had the cops to my door from a very young age, just acting out, fighting and all these things. And I see that now today as alcoholism, you know? Now everybody's talking about ADHD nowadays and all these different things. We didn't know anything about that, really. But I probably have an element of it all, you know? I'm probably on spectrums, like rainbows. But yeah, so it was just in my environment, it was in my DNA, and I didn't know any difference, you know? So I didn't, when I turned 11, my mum took her own life through suicide, you know? And that was really like the fucking, excuse my language, but that was the atomic bomb really of my life. And it shattered things to pieces. My family dynamic fell apart. My siblings were just out of their mind. Not insane thinking at all. A lot of drink was going on. I remember getting drunk for the first time at her funeral. No, I say it's the first time, but it's the one time I kind of remember. And I do remember times before that as well of drinking alcoholic and stuff, whatever, you know. But this was the first time that I got really drunk and I blacked out and fell asleep up on a little wall and I had to be carried home. And I got up again the next day and downstairs and smoking cigarettes and all this kind of stuff, you know, and it was just all acceptable, you know, and just wild, very, very wild. So then I suppose I went into secondary school, so I had one more year left in primary school, and then I went into secondary school, and I went from being quite spiritual that I would walk through that churchyard, but I'd pop in every day and light a candle and pray to my mother and all these kind of things. And I went from that to going to secondary school and just totally losing all care for authority and anything really. It just all manifested itself quite toxically and came out of me in an awful way. I kind of became a bully, to be honest, without even meaning to. I became a bully kind of to secure my footing in school and stuff like that, you know, and I was quite a big young fella. I'm 6'2" or 6'3" now, and I wasn't far off at 12 or 13 years of age, you know. So just because I was big, fellas would kind of, you know, want to kind of take you on or whatever. And I'd know abilities to be fighting or any of this crack. Like so my way of doing of kind of feeling good in myself then, or kind of. Was to be the bully, you know, or to be the loud one, the big mouth, and down the back of the class, roaring and shouting, getting kicked out, getting sent to the office, and all the while I was just hiding these insecurities that were inside me, you know, and the hurt and the pain and the trauma that was tearing me apart inside, really, and not knowing it, of course, and like even at a very young age, being in school, like I remember the feeling of like, what the fuck is going on? Like, how am I here again? How am I outside the office again? How am I in detention again? How am I getting suspended again? Like, and although I knew the crack, I knew what was happening, I couldn't quite control it, you know? Which is exactly what happened along the way then. Like, there was a lot of drink involved, even first years and second years and third years in secondary school. As I say, I got my first proper drunk at my mum's funeral at 11. There was heavy drugs came into it, ecstasy tablets and cocaine, and anything else. You could get a bit of weed and stuff like that then as well. And it was just one thing after another. And I, no matter what you put in front of me, I take it and gladly, you know, because I wanted to die, really. You know, I didn't want to live, and I didn't have the balls to kill myself, you know. So I was just doing it. Kind of, I was killing myself while living, like, you know, and substances became my relief and my release and my friend, and it got me through an awful lot, to be honest. There was a lot of, as I say now, a lot of violence, a lot of sexual violence, a lot of just there was just incredibly toxic. Like, I don't know, I'm not too familiar with this meeting, so I don't want to be saying certain things just in case they trigger people, but it was incredibly toxic, and that's putting it lightly. And it just carried on, and it carried it. Then I would just obviously bring that into my relationships with my alcoholism, with my mental health, with untreated traumas. And it was just one after another, one bad thing after another, you know. Eventually, I ended up going to London for a year when I was 18. I was offered a job over there, and I just went over there to get out of trouble. I had a letter for the judge. Long story short, came back from there for a friend's funeral. She took her own life as well. And she was the first person I'd been intimate with that had died, you know, and that took her own life as well at it, you know. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I came back again for that, and I fell back into my old ways. No, not that I was too much better in London, but I was just away. Whereas I came back here, I slotted right back into where I left off. And I ended up doing something where I ended up getting a 13-month, where I got a 2-year prison sentence, but I served 13 months of it. And inside there, I went to an AA meeting in there through the Red Cross. I went to, I was doing great things. I started writing poetry, which was something I would never have thought I'd do in my life. And I still do it today, which I enjoy. I don't publish anything or anything like that, but I just do it. It's kind of like a bit of therapy. And it was the first time in my life I had to look into myself, you know. Without any substance, no, you could get your hands on certain substance, but not too much of it as you would on the streets. So I got to look into myself, and I had to sit with myself, and I had to learn about myself for the first time in my life, really. And it helped an awful lot. But again, when I came back out, I went back into my old ways, got into a relationship, became extremely toxic. She was a beautiful girl, and I did awful things in that relationship. And then I eventually, through a mutual friend of ours, then I said, I need help. You know, it was the first time in my life I knew that I was the problem, you know, that I had something that was the problem, I suppose. I thought at the time I was the problem, but I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and in my recovery and in counseling that it's actually not me as a person. That wasn't me at all. So it wasn't that I was the problem. I just had a problem, but no solution, you know. And I learned then that through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that there was a solution, and counseling, intensive counseling as well. And it changed me forever, really. It made me into a man. But I remember a man said to me years ago, and he was a bit of a not a nice person, and he said, "You're getting too well too fast," he said. "You're going to slip soon." And I was like, never mind him, like, you know, but he was actually dead right. And I went out to a wedding in Poland after 17 months of sobriety, and I drank out there. And it just shows how cunning, baffling, and powerful this disease is for me. I got up in that morning, I went for a jog around the where we were staying, 5-kilometer jog. I sat down, I did a little mini circuit, body weight circuit. I met the groom, I took him out the back of the building so that we could sit down and meditate. I went down we went through the ceremony, sat at the high table or the top table, and a woman came out with a tray with vodka and little shot glasses, and I took them off her, and I gave him one, me one, and I poured the two of them, and we drew them back. And by the end of the night, I'd taken a bag of speed, and I was off my game really around the place. And just a total different beast came out of me again, you know. And then I had to justify that, and I stayed drinking. I tried to go to meetings again when I came back, but my body wouldn't allow it. And I believe what your man said of me getting too well too fast, it actually happened. My ego got inflated again, and I thought I could do it. And I was back out there drinking for 4 years, and it was horrible, really. You're trying to just, I thought the conversations I was having in my head were happy ones, but they weren't at all. I was actually just justifying my actions so that people could, so people wouldn't worry about me. You know, I'd be like, "Oh, no, I'm grounded, this, that, and the other." And yeah. Yeah, it's fine, but it's very cultish, and yeah, you know, you get well, but then you have to move on, you know, and mad talk, like, you know. But but anyway, that's the way it went, and luckily enough, it brought me to my knees again, like, you know. It brought me to almost taking my own life, and I got onto friends of mine, and they brought me to a meeting. And I went in September 14th last year, and I went and I slipped twice. I slipped in October, then I got a bit of bad news in December, and then I haven't drank since. So 2 years ago, sorry. So I'm in my 23rd month of sobriety. I'll be 2 years next month, the 12th of December, and it's amazing. At the moment, this is my aunt's house that I'm in. I'm living upstairs because all her kids have moved out. So I was 5 months sober, and they say never to do anything drastic in your first 2 years of sobriety, or 5 years sometimes. And of course, I didn't listen. And I met a girl online, and we hit it off. I went over and visited her in New York. She came to Ireland to me, and I ended up moving everything that I had to New Jersey. That didn't work out. I was living in a luxury building. I went from a luxury building to a houseboat in the space of about 8 months. But luckily, the likes of Bridget and other members in New Jersey really were good to me, and they kept me under the straight and narrow. They put their hand around my shoulder, and they were there for me. And they got me through. I saved up a few pound of cash money that I was working, and I got a ticket home again. I was home by last December. But I spent my first year in, celebrated my first year in the Barrow Mansion in Jersey City, and I never regret that for as long as I live. It was beautiful, and I love all the members there, and I will try to get back sometime as well soon. So I came back, and I saw the housing situation in Ireland is just as bad as New York, really. I typed into like a search engine here to search for a place in Cork City for 1,100 a month, and there's nothing on the system, you know, nothing at all comes up. So it's, and really, you can't really afford anything else. Like, I'm making a good enough wage for someone who's not qualified in anything. And it's just unlivable, really. So I'm living here in my aunt's place at the moment, but I have to move out soon. But my another uncle of mine, her brother, my dad's brother, has offered me a room in his place, which is great, you know. It's not my own, of course, and it's things could be worse. But if I keep focusing on stuff like that, I'd never be happy, you know. So I'm happy just to have people around me that are inviting me into their homes. My aunt here rang me and said, "Why don't you move in with us?" And I said, "No." So like, that wouldn't be the case if I was out there doing the stuff that I used to be doing, you know. I'm very grateful to be here. I'm one of the blessed ones. I'm not, as I said, I have people over here now writing articles about me. I do my own podcast. I don't normally have a beard and long hair like this, but I'm doing it for charity. I've raised nearly 3,000 euros for a suicide awareness charity here in Ireland. The GoFundMe has gone from the 1st of January to the next 1st of January. And I've climbed the highest peak of Ireland twice in one day, and got good funds for that as well. Do my own podcast. I do all these things. And at any given day, I can be an absolute head case, or I can be like a guru. You know, like, it's all in the day, and I try to keep it all in the day, you know. It's a great thing. It's, no matter how bad I get, once I don't drink, it's going to be so much better, you know, or drug or anything else, you know. Sometimes I can eat too much. If I open a packet of cookies, I do find it hard to put them back in the cupboard and stuff like that. But you know, we can work with these things. I've been offered a promotion in the job I'm in at the moment. I'm currently onto a financial institute here to get a loan to go and visit my brother in Australia as a surprise. It's not working out too well, but I'm back and forth. So yeah, look, I have a car outside the door. I have a wallet with a few pound in it, a few euros in it, a few dollars in it. And you know, and life could be so much worse, has been so much worse. And it can also get better, but I'm just quite content in where I am today. And I'm blessed to have people like Bridget in my life who will just text me out of the blue and be like, "You want to speak Tuesday at 1 o'clock? And I'd be like, "Okay, let's do it." So yeah, I always say yes in any kind of service like this, because if my story can help anyone else's, then, or help anyone else to strive in their own life, then jump on, you know what I mean? So I'm going to leave it there, guys. And thanks very much for asking me to share.